Well, hello, friends. We're back again, and it's been a very busy few days with the blue moon in Leo, and the various programs that we have tried to send forth regarding all of the interesting material with respect to that. We're starting with program number 33, basically in this little segue, we can see DK calling for a fearless seeing of things as they are in truth, a facing up to the facts and being ready for unexpected discoveries about ourselves. As I did mention, a man left the work. He was Alice Bailey's secretary, and he fell in love, left the work, and DK called it the greatest of all glamours, falling in love. Maybe rising in true love is a different thing. He came back sadder but wiser. DK commented to him that he had made some unexpected discoveries about himself. DK says, one of the first lessons which a disciple needs to learn is that where he thinks he is strongest and where he finds the most satisfaction is very frequently the point of greatest danger, and of weakness. Astral conditions are oft seen reversed, hence the glamour which often overcomes a disciple. Well, we have to be ready for that kind of revelation about ourselves. Now, we don't have Master DK writing letters to us through Alice Bailey. The time will again come when our association with him is closer, and I do believe on the physical plane, as he will be one of the five masters that is beginning the externalization process with his ashram focused on right human relations, and I would say very much on the healing arts and bringing messages from the hierarchy in a way that is permitted. Now, right now, we're about to look at something quite interesting. I know you've read it before, many of you, but it is a moment of self-disclosure for him. He says, in this connection, my brothers, I will admit you into a piece of personal history, and one which is quite ordinary. So may I say, this is not a unique thing. He says, quite ordinary. Okay, and one which is quite ordinary in the life of the disciple. It may serve to carry its lesson and its warning. So let us hope and trust that that is the case for us, that the point will come across and we will not be beguiled, misled, and led astray by our apparently good motives. Okay. He goes on. Several lives ago, my master, now this is Master KH, saw in me a weakness. It was one of which I was quite unaware, and it was in fact a quality which I regarded as a strength and which I hugged to myself as a virtue. Isn't that so often the way? The problem is not seen as a problem. It's seen as one of our strengths. It's a reversal, isn't it? Now, he gives us a hint. This is esoteric language. I was then a young man. What is that? That tells us something about maybe his status as a second-degree initiate. So, as many lives ago as it took from now, now he is a master. Ever since 1875, a master. As many lives ago as it took to be a second-degree initiate, that's the time period we are talking about. At least that's my opinion. I was then a young man, not, may I say, not a rich young man. Rich young man is a third-degree initiate, okay? And then there are these other categories. I was then a young man, he says, anxious to help my master and humanity. May I say, or so he thought, anxious to help my master and humanity, but in the last analysis, I was very keen about myself as an aspirant. And of course, no doubt, a true aspirant who had taken the first initiation and probably the second, I would guess. He says, I was very keen about myself as an aspirant and very pleased with myself. Now, may I say, that's always a danger when we get too pleased with our personal self, basically. Then we're not forgetting the good self and the bad self and letting only Christ be seen and heard. We've got our eyes on our personal self and are making judgments about our virtue. And in this particular case, it seems that Master DK made a positive judgment about himself. And then it goes on to say, cloaking this satisfaction under the garb of a reiterated humility. Ooh. Well, you know, at this time, Master DK has a reputation of being among the most humble of the masters. He's always putting himself in the background. He's not advancing himself for notice in any way. But now, let me say it's the real thing, because he's passed through some lessons and is sadder but wiser. As he often says of his superiors, I say here, very reverently, let it be said. Well, what happened? Okay. The master poured into me his strength and energy, and so stimulated me that what I thought was a virtue and what I had denied and repudiated as a vice proved my undoing. I symbolically crashed to earth through the very weight of my weaknesses or weakness. Now that's interesting how the stimulation from the master could bring to the surface all these, or this particular undiscovered trait. And DK is going to tell us about this particular trait. You might well ask, he says, what this weakness was. And may I say, here comes the reversal. It was my love for my master, which was my undoing. Now that's a strange idea until we elaborate on it a little bit here. Repeating, he says, you might well ask what my weakness was. It was my love for my master, which was my undoing. He pointed out to me, after the failure, I guess he's not going to elaborate on the specifics of what that failure was, but we get the general idea. He pointed out to me, after the failure, that my love for him was, in reality, based upon pride in myself and a profound satisfaction with myself as an aspirant and as a disciple. Now think that through. Think that through. The master thinks that he has a great love for his master, and of course that has been proven over and over again, but at this time that love was in reality based upon what he says, what he calls pride in myself and a profound satisfaction with myself as an aspirant and disciple. So, may I say, it gives us pause to think. Do we have anything like that operating in our lives, where there is this astral reversal, this inversion, this astral inversion, so that one cannot really see what is going on, but imagines it's something else? Now, of course, DK goes on and says, this I violently denied and was grieved that he should so misunderstand me. It could be a reaction of ours, couldn't it? When we're blind to the fact of how much self-love in the lower sense we have. Repeating, this I violently denied and was grieved that he should so misunderstand me. I proved him, says DK, to be right eventually, through a life of failure and the depth of my egotism. Now, these are the generalities, right? We don't know much about what happened or exactly when, except that it was several initiatory degrees ago. Well, he says he doesn't exaggerate, you know, really. He's not the type. And he talks about the depth of his egotism, something that he later saw, and he calls it a life of failure. I guess we all have to learn the uses of failure. He tells us somewhere, all have failed, my brother. All have sinned, all have failed. And then he goes on and says, I learnt through that failure, but I lost much time from the standpoint of useful service. I guess, may I say, it's almost inevitable that human beings learn the hard way, and learning the intelligent way is rarer, I think, than learning the hard way. I found, he says, that I was really serving myself and not humanity. From similar mistakes, I seek to save you. For time is a great factor in service. Time is a great factor in service. So I wonder how we feel, what our reaction is, our response, when we find, when we read about this episode in the cycle of lives of Master DK. He wouldn't be talking to us about this unless he felt it would help us somehow avoid what he fell into long ago. And when was it? Was it in the time of Pythagoras? Was it later? Maybe we don't need to know that. But some time ago, and although he does not now have what might be called a causal body, or at the time of this writing, still there is that faculty of memory stored in the atomic triangle, and maybe stored within the permanent atoms of the spiritual triad. In this case, he's using recollection. And also memory, in terms of conditioning his present behavior, does exist. So there's that place in Rays and the Initiations where DK says something like, let there be no recollection, and yet, let memory exist. But this is a deliberate recall, recollection for our benefit. Now, DK goes on to say, for the masses of humanity, time is not of very great importance, but for the service of the race, it matters much. Lose not time, therefore, in undue self-analysis, self-depreciation, or self-defense. You know, the opposite reactions to a prideful denial that something may be amiss. It's a consideration that one is unworthy, and that too brings on a loss of time. He says, go forward with discrimination where your unfoldment is concerned, and with love and understanding where your group is concerned. Discrimination upon the fourth subplane of the mental plane, and love and understanding within the soul and within the Buddhic plane. Go forward in those ways. Master Moria is keen to let us know that, and I've said it, I suppose, many times because it must have an impact on me, that to rob people of their time is equivalent to murder, and to rob yourself of time, lose time because of your own errors or for whatever reason, is equivalent to suicide. Master DK is not so extreme in his language, but you do get the idea that for would-be servers such as we are, the loss of time is serious. And I'm sure if we examine our lives closely, we will see those instances where, despite all excuses and alibis, we are losing time. Now, the fact that maybe philosophically time doesn't even exist is a whole nother matter, but we're in the realm of the universal Mahamaya, and within that realm, time is a great actuality. Master DK goes on, where I, your teacher, am concerned, give to my words the attention which is due, and endeavor to cooperate with me. I shall then, someday, have the joy of welcoming you to the secret place where all true servers and initiates must eventually meet and unite. Now, this sounds to me a bit like more the interior of the ashram. And to a focus within the Buddhic plane, as the 2-4-6 ashrams, above all the ashrams, have been moved or moved to the Buddhic plane back around the year 1925. So it's very simple, isn't it? Pay attention to what the master says and endeavor to carry out his instructions. That means, as he says, cooperate with me. Because that is the way forward. That that type of cooperation. Now, going on a bit with what the master says. I have revealed to you, my disciples, my true name. Well, you know, somehow Alice Bailey left his name at the bottom of a document. She did that not deliberately, but he, DK had to confirm it. Yes, this was who he was. And he talks about the implications of that name being revealed. Excuse me. I have revealed to you, my disciples, my true name. The necessity for eradicating all reason for the speculative questioning of some of you as to my identity and of spurning others of you. Spurring others of you onto renewed and consecrated effort are two of my reasons for relinquishing my anonymity. So apparently this anonymity was lifted in the relatively early 30s when this portion of the book was written. And may I say that having the Tibetan remain anonymous was causing some trouble of a speculative nature on the part of the Agni Yoga people, who suspected him of being a representative of the other side. And all this while a picture of Jwalkul and two of his disciples was sitting in the museum of the Agni Yoga group. So there are strange ironies that are operative here. Another reason, he says, is that I would have you recognize the fact that you are accepted disciples. Now, certainly a number of them were at that time, and now he seems to be saying that in a way they all are because they're under his supervision. The fact that you are accepted disciples with all that that status necessarily implies of responsibility and opportunity. Still another deciding factor with me is to test out your ability to keep silent until it is no longer necessary to do so. Well, I think I'll all of these are reasons why he confirmed his identity when it had been apparently indicated at the bottom of a document that was a tangible document and which would be hard to deny. But he finds reason not to deny it. So I'll go on here about silence. This is what he says. Still another deciding factor with me is to test out your ability to keep silent until it is no longer necessary to do so. Silence, he says, is one of the prime prerequisites for initiation and something which every disciple must perforce learn. There is, therefore, the necessity of the test. Now, there's another almost humorous statement in the Rays and the Initiations, wherein he says, now some of you seem to think that in order to take initiation, you must not talk. And then he says, a lot of you would be better off if you talked about the right things at the right time. So, in a way, that is a counter statement to the one that students might misread right here. Silence is a prime prerequisite for initiation, and DK advises, yes, but it is occult silence, and some of you might do better if you actually did speak about the right things at the right time with the right people. But in any case, because silence is a test, we have to be tested. So he says, therefore, the necessity for the test. Many of you, he says, are already interiorly convinced of my identity. You have not voiced your belief in this connection except to AAB, who has not responded with any corroborating evidence or comments. If you cannot be trusted to keep silence and to preserve a detached and independent attitude, then you are not ready for that which I have to give, and the sooner we discover that, the better. If you are unable to retain a silent tongue, even among yourselves, then you are unfit to be trusted, and that I should dislike to believe. All of this is about the disciples' attitude once the disciple discovers or is convinced of the master's identity. Because after all, in Initiation, Human and Solar, Master DK wrote about Master DK as if perhaps Master DK were someone else other than the author working through Alice Bailey. So all of this is about the fitness of the disciple to receive what the Tibetan imparts. Going on with what DK says, if when you have discovered who I am, you question the wisdom of my decision to reveal myself to you and hold that I should have withheld my identity, then that too will be revealing and will guide me in my future approaches to you. Let me pause and say, well, why would a person do that? And maybe there's some kind of questioning of the master's judgment or some kind of pride involved in some sense. A wishing that the master's identity would remain a secret. Why would that be? Maybe so that that identity would not be shared with others. Anyway, if knowledge, he says, of who I am leads you into the dangerous path of the devotee, it will be good for you to discover the tendency within yourself. So right now, he's talking about some possible benefits of understanding who he is. Going on, if you henceforth overemphasize the importance of my words, and if you fall into the dangerous habit of accepting authority, your weakness will stand revealed to me, to yourself, and to your group brothers, and we shall all profit thereby. Now, what we find is that he is now in the position that his master was long ago. Seeing whether weaknesses exist in the disciple or disciples, and perhaps having to point out these weaknesses also to those who will say, well, I don't agree. How could you possibly be misunderstand me? I guess it's just going on and on, this idea that somehow our true motives are misunderstood by a superior consciousness who can see right into us. It's a little naive, isn't it, to think that that is the case. But anyway, he doesn't want to produce devotees and authoritarians. And if such tendencies are revealed, then the whole group will profit. He says, you will have discovered an innate weakness, which discovery of my identity will have drawn forth. May I say that if we have weaknesses, and of course we do, and often largely unsuspected weaknesses, just like unsuspected glamours, it's better to discover them before they create more dangerous situations for oneself and for the group. And now he goes on to say, if you are burdened by the knowledge, then you must learn to carry burdens. That, may I say, is an Aquarian virtue, the weight lifter, eventually carrying the burden of the world, along with his brothers and sisters in the hierarchy. So he says, if you are burdened by the knowledge, then you must learn to carry burdens, or else you will be of no use as a world server. So don't we see how DK is taking an event which started out as an error and turning it towards the good? So there is an understanding in his disciples of what can be gained by this revelation. This is something maybe I think Sanat Kumara is always attempting to do, to bring a good out of evil and to correct what otherwise would be mistakes just left to fester. Okay, so I'm going to just, it's such an important section, really, because it tells us about our latent reactions. And it tells us how such an event can be a very revealing event, both to the perpetrator of the reaction to the event and to the group of which that individual is a part. So let's just say that in all this, his disciples were called to account. They weren't just left to gossip about it or complain about it or any of the reactions here that he is discussing. They were led into a situation where they were forced to see themselves. Now, friends, there's so much about ourselves, at least, well, both soul and personality, that we just don't see yet. And on the path of occultism, the hidden must stand revealed. This is in the rules of the road. Each man sees and knows the villainy of each. And yet with that great revelation, there is no turning back, no spurning of each other, no shakiness upon the road. The road goes forward into day. So we have to get used to withstanding the pressure of the group gaze. The fact, he says, that I am a master alters me not. I am still your Tibetan teacher and the same instructor who has taught you for many years. Well, maybe this is written a little later than I thought. If he says many years, but of course, we could be speaking of other lives too. He goes on to say, I remain the same individual and am in no wise different. Any reaction upon your part will be a personality reaction, and therefore to be recognized, dealt with, and finally subdued. May I say, we hear so much about the thorny road of occultism. The thorns are painful, but they are subtle thorns so often. And they are thorns of humiliation, the rendering humble of the disciple, so he can have humility as an adjusted sense of right proportion, which is hardly the case at the beginning, as Master DK says, that the beginner is always more conceited than the experienced disciple and is always overestimating himself. But I suppose that if you stay with the teaching long enough, the humbling, the proportionality, really begins to dawn. I know I've been with this teaching now, AAB, 50 years. Blavatsky, some years even before that. And I've seen a change, and I'm sure that those of you who have persisted have seen changes in your sense of proportion. The dawning of what is really important, what is really essential, what can be done without, because it just is not as important as the essential. I'm sure you've seen that. If you have had the wisdom to fix your consciousness upon what the teacher, a superb teacher, has to impart. Now, what else is said here, friends? Some statements that I'm not going to be able to deal with tonight. We still have a midnight program, you know, so we have to just keep working at it when the time requires. And this is a long section yet in part 8, which can't possibly be done in one or two programs. This will be a short program, therefore. So Master DK says, let us go forward together, my brothers and chelas. And we would have to remember here that he addresses both the men and women within his groups as brothers, largely because of the masculine incarnation of the human race at this time, and because in general, humanity represents the masculine polarity and the Deva kingdom, the feminine polarity, so the word brothers is always coming up. It's not to be interpreted in the sort of sexist way it might be by the unknowing. I had an encounter with a very capable person who was good at raising funds and inspiring people to give, but she just felt there was an offense there because the word brothers was being used because of the masculine terminology. She was caught in the current prevailing thought forms about masculinity and femininity. And I saw, well, there was, you know, it was the language of the great invocation and the use of the word men with no possible knowledge on the part of this very accomplished individual that the word men relates to manas and the function of the human kingdom. One was just going to have to wait about that, and one could not force that issue. If we get hypersensitive about all that, we tend to forget that we change the polarity of our incarnations quite fairly often. Now, DK did say of himself that another little piece of personal history to which he admits us, that the majority of his incarnations have been masculine and Eastern. From the Far East, he seems to be saying. I don't know when we get back into Atlantean and Lemurian days whether that carries, but certainly for a long time, if a person says they have an Eastern orientation and most of their incarnations have been in the East, it at least has application to the Aquarian Age, or rather, Aryan Age, the fifth root race. So he says, let us go forward together, my brothers and Chalas. Maybe, may I say, that every brother is a Chala and every Chala is a brother, maybe. Along the path of service, let us go forward together, my brothers and Chalas. Along the path of service, let us together enter into the light, capital L, and tread the way to world peace, which, of course, may I say, was a great objective at that time of impending war, which the masters saw impending, and which others did not see so clearly. So let us together enter into the light and tread the way to world peace and not to personal illumination. And then comes this really important sentence. Illumination is inevitable, but incidental. So we have to stop worrying about whether we shall become illumined by following the Master's advice. Yes, we will. But The real goal is to produce the integrated, fused, unified, harmonized. Plan useful group that can be an instrument of the master, and that's how he has to look at us and tells us that he does look at us that way. As, now he goes on, as regards all of you, with what have I to deal? Now he's, may I say, giving us his perspective, and that's a unique thing he does. He does give the perspective of the master. He gives the perspective of the Christ, looking on at humanity, and speaks about the certain horror with which the Christ looks on, judging, according to the condition of humanity, what he must deal with over a more than 2,000-year period. As regards all of you, with what have I to deal, he says. An untested group, a static group, a critical group, and a group subject to pronounced glamours. Such is the material with which I must carry forward my work. Now, isn't that a sudden objective point of view? And maybe a little shocking to the people who might otherwise pride themselves on being part of such a group. An untested group, a static group. He did say at one point he wished everybody could be in his groups younger and more courageous. Now those two virtues alone would help with the kind of stasis which the group apparently was experiencing. A critical group, and that would be, you know, part of the great heresy of separateness, and certainly would not lead to group integration and fusion and unity. A critical group, and a group subject to pronounced clamors. And, you know, just to show his objectivity about this, he refers to the group as material. Such is the material with which I must carry forward my work. What can I do, he says, in such a situation, my brothers? I can trust your devotion to humanity, your willingness to learn, and your determination to proceed along the path of service at any cost. Now, even though we might say that the members of that group maybe were much like we are, this need to count the cost was definitely there with them. And would we be willing to fulfill the Tibetans' trust and at any cost proceed along the path of service? I suppose that would be one of those tests. How high a price are we willing to pay to to proceed along the path of service. Well, even if DK is dealing with an untested, static, critical, glamored group, he at least trusts in this determination, this willingness to learn, and this willingness to proceed along the path of service at any cost. And he says, yes, this I most certainly do. This kind of trust I give to you. It's good to know, isn't it, the master's objective analysis. Of ourselves. And now he's going to deal with the objectives that he has in mind for all of us. And it is, in a way, something of a new section that I think I might be better off delaying until I'm able to do the next program because of, you know, what's required to prepare for the upcoming program in just about an hour. So we've reached page 80, and I think we started on page 77. Let's just see. We're up to page 80. And now that is program 33, and we'll be going on to program 34. There's still, I don't know, 20 something pages left in this section, and when I read these things, I am possessed of a great desire to be able to work through many books in a way that might be helpful to you and to me, of course, as I go through and learn more, inevitably. But at the same time, hopefully offer some thoughts which will strengthen our group and groups. So it's not until tomorrow that I can begin to think about moving on from Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, Section 1, still in Part 8, the video commentary. You know, when you read all this together, it just seems like almost using slang, you know, a heap of requirements. Of course, they're organized very well organized, and maybe you begin to wonder, how can I ever carry all this out? Because the Tibetan speaks with meticulous entirety, and he presents a picture of the divine pattern and of detailed unity, and he gives specific instructions. Maybe not as full as the instructions that he will give when he's in person among us, which I think is inevitable, you know. Somewhere in externalization of the hierarchy, we have Master KH, Master M, maybe they hold back a bit. We have an English master, we have Master R, who always seems to find externalizing himself to be a natural tendency, just as he did in France a few centuries ago. 2.5 centuries ago, and then Master Decay. So a number of masters will externalize themselves, but it seems that these ashrams are the initial wave of that externalization. We're simply, my friends, in a preparatory stage now. If we could but realize it. And DK has spoken that he writes even more for the future and for the future of the individuals he has gathered than he writes for the present. He gives them a basis, yes, but something much more demanding is coming, and something which can be more easily fulfilled because of the experience of having worked with him in this manner, having succeeded in some measures and failed in others. You know, when you see that out of 50 some gathered students, there were 8 remaining who were actually doing, carrying out what he wanted carried out, you begin to realize, well, many have fallen by the wayside or had reached their high water mark, which the master was able to assess. So not all were invited from the groups of 9 into the new reorganized seed group, or into the group of, was it 14, that were studying in New York City with Alice Bailey at the time of every full moon, studying ashramic life. Oh, this is a big project, friends. And we're just on the ground floor of it. And I think should be very happy about that opportunity. It's challenging. The eye of the master is upon us. The eye of our co-disciples is upon us. All true. And we make mistakes. And we step on the thorns. Or reach out for the flower and prick our fingers on the thorns. That the rose, as the symbol of the soul, should be surrounded and protected by thorns is a great lesson to us. But I'm trusting that those subtle changes of consciousness which are inevitable in the life of the advancing disciple will come to all of us. Sooner or later, depending upon our sincerity, our humility, our love, our willingness to learn, our willingness to serve at any cost. Easily said, but oh, what is it that happens when it's demanded? So sadder but wiser, often, we proceed. And each time, on a slightly higher turn of the spiral, we account for ourselves with greater success and contribute to the greater success of the group. And the changes will be subtle, but stay alert, because the changes will happen. They can't so much be forced, but they can be noticed, and the conditions that lead to them can be insisted upon, and we can discipline ourselves, purify ourselves, so that the changes are not blocked by our glamours. Remember all the things he said: untested, static, critical, glamoured. Do we think we're any different? We're not. But we have the faith, and we have the determination. And he said here, devotion to humanity. He's careful there. He doesn't say your devotion to me makes this possible. No. Devotion to humanity. So we have to test ourselves on that point. And certainly we are relatively sincere, willing to learn, and even though we don't really understand what the divine will is, we have enough of that fixed determination which will lead us in the path of righteousness and wider achievement for the wider context, the group, the nation, humanity as a whole. We have to make sure we have at least that kind of devotion to humanity. Remember, the monad is not without devotion. It's the Lord of ceaseless, persevering devotion. And if we don't find devotion in the solar angel, angel of the presence, who for millions of years has supervised its fellow, though less developed, monad, that is what we are, then where will we find a prototype of devotion? Okay, that's enough for tonight, and we will continue, and love from Tui and myself, and Mikhail, and BL, and Joe, and Michael, Stacy, and some of our other friends who have helped us ongoingly at conference time, and when we need help to get this material to you in the few years which remain before a very decisive 100-year conclave in the year 2025 and the beginning around that time of the extension of the great teaching by Master DK. So lots of love and many blessings from all of us. We'll be back. Bye-bye.